The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
So the Democratic National Committee is going to hold its convention starting tomorrow. So it's running from August 19th through until Thursday, which is August 22nd. It is, of course, one of the most unusual Democratic conventions in history, one of the most unusual main party political conventions in American history, by virtue of the fact that we have had Joe Biden drop out of the race, that we have had Kamala Harris be selected rather than elected, and that she appears to be riding something of a wave. The question being, how long will that wave continue? Because Republican strategists are saying that it is a honeymoon and that all will return to normal with Trump taking primacy again in the polling and ultimately when the election happens. I'm joined by writer, communicator and strategist Alistair Campbell to give us his insight. Morning, Alistair.
Hey, Anton, how are you?
I'm very good. Let's start with that thing of whether or not this is a honeymoon. It is a glorious honeymoon from the Democrats' perspective so far. How long do you think it can last?
Well, I think what I prefer to see it less as a honeymoon, the more as they've seized back momentum. And the fact is they could keep momentum right up until the November the 5th. It's quite hard to keep momentum in any campaign. But I think what's interesting is that, you know, it's a few weeks ago, the conventional wisdom was that Trump was home and dry. The conventional wisdom now is that Kamala Harris is home and dry. And neither of those things are necessarily right. But what you've got, when you get momentum in a campaign, you get energy, you get money, which is massively important in the American context. And I think that people had an expectation issue about Kamala Harris, which she has exceeded. I think that because she was vice president, because she played the very typical vice presidential role of being fairly low key, fairly low profile, not really sort of, you know, asserting herself in any way to look like a threat to Joe Biden. But Joe Biden having stepped down, she has stepped up, and so far she's not put her wrong.
Can we look at the challenges then facing each campaign? Because I would struggle to think of a campaign that has been so defined by its attack on its opponent as Trump's last few months have been. The let's go Brandon flag, the euphemism for F Joe Biden, has become as ubiquitous as pro-Trump flags. We now have Hamlet without the prince. If you're Trump and you're the Trump campaign, what do you do?
Well, if you listen to the American version of our podcast with Anthony Scaramucci, who used to work for Trump, he says that what you do is you focus on what you think you can identify as the policy weaknesses of the Biden-Harris administration, which he says are economy. The economic data is good, but people don't feel it in their daily lives. Crime, immigration, the border. Now, the problem is for anybody, and Scaramucci says this, anybody who's ever worked with Trump, he is incapable of sticking to messages that require discipline. So he has gone off on this kind of pretty vicious attack stuff against Vice President Harris, you know, suggesting that she's not really American, she's thick, she's nasty, she's got a horrible laugh, all this sort of stuff. And I think it's interesting, if you think about the people that Trump needs to hold on to, the sort of undecideds, I think he's pushing a lot of them over to Kamala Harris. So he should get back on a more disciplined campaign. But the other thing that I think has happened, Anton, I think Trump used to be very, very interesting. And I think he's become really boring. I mean, he's interesting because he's such a phenomenon. But what he says is really boring. And whereas what the Democrats have got now with Harris and with Tim Walz, they've become interesting. They become the thing that people want to look at. And they're positive and they're hopeful. They're aspirational. So I think if she carries on like this, it's definitely not a done deal. It's a strange country. There's just a very small number of swing states where the votes really, really, really matter. But I think she's in very, very good nick, and I'm really hopeful. I'm going to go to Chicago for the week. I'm really hopeful this is going to be a great week for her.
When you say that Trump has become boring, is that he has lost something that he once had, or is it just that the novelty of him playing the hits has worn off?
I think it's the fact that he does play the same songs again and again and again. You know, they stole the election. I'm great. Everything that I touch is great. The economy was wonderful when I was around. Now it's terrible. He just sort of has these sort of, he riffs off these themes, which I just don't think, I think people are turning off. I mean, I don't know about you, but I turn off now. I used to watch interviews with Trump. I don't now. I know what he's going to say. I didn't watch that Elon Musk thing. I thought, I know what he's going to say. I know it's going to be a kind of absolute sort of pathetic love-in. Rory Stewart watched it for me and we talked about it on the podcast. But whereas I think with you know, last night, Fiona and I both, oh, what time's Harris' speech? We wanted to watch it. It's interesting. She's saying new stuff. She's coming out in a different way. And I think this thing about that most elections are battles between hope and fear. Trump can only do fear. He doesn't really do hope. What I think, I thought Tim Walz said when he accepted her nomination as the vice presidential pick, and he said, thank you for bringing the joy back. And there is something joyful. Now, joyful doesn't of itself win you votes, and joyful doesn't create jobs, and joyful doesn't kind of, you know, put bread on the table. But what it does is it gives you this, the word they use in America the whole time is this vibe. There is a vibe about the Democrats at the moment that people are flocking to.
Now, what about the challenges, though, in maintaining that, particularly maintaining that tomorrow through Thursday? Because they have to balance providing an appropriate encomium for Joe Biden in his swan song, while at the same time keeping a bit of blue water between him and Harris so that she doesn't get tarred with whatever legacy he is seen to have that might be damaging from a voter perspective. How do you balance that?
Look, I could be wrong about this. I mean, I actually think that Joe Biden, having stepped down, has become very popular again. I think that what happened was that because he was so clearly kind of ailing in terms of energy, in terms of his speech and so forth, and apologies for my voice, by the way, I've got a terrible throat at the moment, but he, I think he's got a good record. I think in a funny sort of way, I think Biden, you call it a swan song, but I think Biden having his moment at the convention will be very, very powerful. He's clearly, even if he is a bit bitter, he's not going to show it. He's a big guy. He's going to rise above that. He is going to absolutely endorse Kamala Harris as the candidate. And then there's two or three days of a gap and they'll fill it with all sorts of stuff. And I don't know whether the Clintons are involved. I don't know if the Obamas are involved. I don't know what the program is. I'll start checking that when I get there. But I think that come Thursday, it will all be about her. And I actually think that one of the things that Katty Kay said on our podcast, that she doesn't think Kamala's a great conference convention speaker. I think she's a good speaker. And I think Walz is a good speaker. I thought his speech, his acceptance speech was brilliant. I mean, a really, really good conference type speech. And I think that, look, there's going to be a lot of noise outside. There's going to be these huge demonstrations about Gaza. And don't forget, 1968, the last time Chicago held the convention, we're talking riots about Vietnam. So there's a kind of, you know, there'll be protests in the air. But I think within the convention hall, I suspect you're going to see a very well choreographed 4-day build up to a big speech. And then I think she'll be well set.
You mentioned Tim Walz and his first speeches. We're coming up on the Walz versus J.D. Vance debate. How significant is the choice of vice president? It has gained a lot of attention in the last week because we had Tim Walz and fairly coming fairly hot on the heels of Vance being appointed to the ticket. But does either actually matter?
I think it matters a bit. I think it matters more if you make a bad choice. So, for example, if you remember when Dan Quayle, as it happened, he got elected, but Dan Quayle, I think, was a negative for Bush Senior. I think, let me ask you a question, and this is a bit unfair because I've just looked it up. Who was Michael Dukakis's running mate?
Oh, God, that's a good one. I haven't breathed.
Benson. Who was Bob Dole's running mate?
Was Lloyd Benson the one who challenged the media to find out if he had had an affair?
Is that I think he was.
I think that's right.
No, that was Hart, wasn't it?
It was. You're right. Sorry. That was Gary Hart.
Well, and who was Bob Dole?
I don't know.
Running mate. Jack Kemp. So whoever loses this contest, I suspect we won't talk about them very much. Trump was president, wants to be president again, and even before he was president, was a huge figure. J.D. Vance was not that well known outside the States until recently. He's become very well known. I don't actually think it's a very good choice. I think he's made some pretty big mistakes since he was picked. Whereas I think what's interesting about Waltz, who likewise was not that well known, he kind of, everything that people look into in his past, it seems to cement a view of him as a pretty good choice. Whereas, and again, to quote Scaramucci, who knows Trump better than I do, he says he thinks Trump will be trying to get rid of Vance because he thinks he's become a negative. He talks about himself too much rather than about Trump. And he's clearly made a lot of mistakes in the past, which are starting to, you know, they're starting to build up.
Although being cynical, does Trump not need something to feed to the religious right and to the religious conservative voters? And to some extent, that's J.D. Vance. I mean, he may be Catholic rather than Protestant, but nonetheless, he is devoutly Christian and that ticks that box, so let him at it.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I don't understand why, but it seems to me that Trump has got the evangelical right pretty well stitched up anyway. Possibly that could be one of the factors in it. But I think that, you know, let's be absolutely frank, Trump is a complete narcissist. It's all about him. He doesn't want the media saying that Vance is good, but he doesn't want them all saying that he's bad, because that's bad for him. He basically wants somebody that they can ignore.
Mike Pence really was the ideal. If he hadn't attempted,
totally.
If that hanging incident hadn't occurred, it would have been a much easier job for him.
Well, to be fair to Mike Pence, he got the psychology, didn't he? He played second fiddle very, very much. But then when it came to him actually being asked to offend the Constitution, he refused. And, you know, it was enormously to his credit that he did.
You mentioned whether or not J.D. Vance was a good pick. Tim Walz, they attempted to do to Tim Walz what they successfully did to John Kerry with the Swift voting. There was that attack on the idea that he had either both claimed stolen valor and then failed to serve when called upon to actually go into combat. That didn't seem to stick, or did it?
I don't think it did. I mean, look, you and I are not in America. We don't know. We don't know what sort of shifting opinion and what isn't. But I think what came through in the first few days after the appointment of Tim Walz was just how nice he is. Just what a sort of nice guy. And there was one interview he did where they were saying, well, look, you know, they're doing this video about you with all these sort of left liberal things that you've done, like, you know, the school meals taken. Oh, I want children to have food in their belly. That's so bad. And he just seems to be able to, he's got a lovely manner about him. And I think the other thing that people, I think there is within Americans a sort of, I mean, look, I think you and I, well, I certainly find it difficult to imagine that they elected Trump once, let alone they could do it twice. I think there is a decency in most American people, and I think they respond to decency. And I think what you're seeing with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz as a team is decency.
You mentioned that thing of the vibe. I'm just back from spending some time in the States, and one of the things that I was intrigued by was, if you compare this to 2016 in particular, the sense of momentum, you know, the way America, despite its scale, it can be extremely faddish. So if you remember Crocs, plastic shoes with holes in them, 1 month there was no Crocs. 3 months later, everybody's wearing Crocs. Likewise, the Atkins diet. 1 month, everybody had hamburgers. 3 months later, nobody has buns. There was that sense of momentum with the Trump campaign back in 2016, to a lesser extent the last time. It doesn't feel like that now.
But I think that's partly because it does feel like all the old songs. It's the same old stuff. I mean, you know, he's playing golf. He's at Mar-a-Lago. He's reappointing people like Lewandowski. He's pointed two of his family members to the transition team. It just feels same old, same old, same
but
old.
But I wonder, Alistair, is there something more in it? I wonder, is there something that's starting to run into the sands? I was intrigued by, I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you did, but the thing of where he praised the Medal of Freedom, the civilian award, more than the Medal of Honor. And his line was that Medal of Honor winners tend to be in bad shape because they've been hit by so many bullets or they're dead. It's better to get the civilian one. Kind of stuff that he said before about Gold Star families and so forth. The commander of the VFW, which is the Veterans of Foreign Wars Association, Al Lippert, the head of the VFW, described that as asinine. Now, the VFW is not known to be a left-leaning organization. I thought that indicated something.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I hadn't really followed that one. I was aware of what he said. I hadn't been aware of the reaction. Because as you, I mean, the thing is that when the sort of Trump-Biden debate was going on, I don't mean the TV debate, I mean the debate about them, and people were saying Joe Biden's losing the plot, Donald Trump regularly says stuff that is either incredibly stupid or very offensive. Now, I think first time around, because it was so unusual for somebody to be so deliberately controversial all the time, that was part of the appeal. I think it's now part of the non-appeal. And I think it's particularly part of the non-appeal to women. I saw a very interesting interview online yesterday with Frank Luntz, who's an American pollster. He was saying he was trying to put together a focus group of undecided young women. And he couldn't find any undecided young women. They were all basically decided, we're back in Harris.
Absolutely. One of my favourite things ever, Frank Luntz came over here about 10 or 15 years ago and did polling in respect to the Irish elections. And watching him try to wrap his head around proportional representation and what that means, was highly entertaining. But does that go to, does the Luntz issue and the pre-decided young women, is that abortion?
A lot of it is abortion, and I think we, you know, the fact is that you talked about the religious right, partly to appeal to and appease the evangelical right. Trump was very, very boastful about, I stopped Roe v. Wade. Well, fine, that helped him with that part of his electorate. But there are, I mean, it's very, and Joe Biden, maybe because of his Catholicism, maybe because of his age, seemed less comfortable with putting abortion center stage in the campaign. Vice President Harris is putting it center stage in the campaign. Every interview you hear with pretty much everybody who's on her side at the moment, they talk about women's freedom over reproductive rights. It's a big thing, and I think that is a huge driver of the votes of women, the votes of young women in particular.
One of the things that characterized Donald Trump, his success in previous campaigns, was his capacity to distill attack into very simple terms. I mean, you had the corrupt Hillary Clinton thing, you had the Sleepy Joe stuff. If you're advising Trump and if you're advising Harris, what's the distilled attack now? What is it that you focus on? If you're trying to take down Harris, and you, what should Trump do? Likewise, what should she be doing against him?
I mean, I find it easier to work out how to take down Trump. I mean, I actually think that they will end up with the slogan, we're not going back, or forward, not back. And that emerged from the crowd, if you remember. That actually started as, she wasn't saying it, the crowd started saying, we're not going back. And I think this sense of America's got to go forward, we're not going back to that. Trump's character, Trump's lies. Now, it is amazing that he's not completely dead politically, given how often he lies, given the corruption, given the fact that his son-in-law became so wealthy while he was president, all this sort of stuff that, I think in our countries people would just run a mile from. But I actually think it's about America not going back, and I think that's a more hopeful message than just sort of attacking Trump. I think they can get him as being the worst president ever. I think the line will be important in the debates. I think she just has to call him out, not sort of get into wrestling matches, but just say, there you go again, that's another lie. We'll be rebutting that later. Meanwhile, let me tell you what America needs to do for the future. I think for Trump to Trump Harris, he's obviously struggling to work out what to do. I don't think the personal stuff works. I think people are sick of it. So, you know, the laugh, constantly going on about how she laughs. I just think this stuff lands. And again, when he was first appearing and he was doing all the nicknames for his Republican opponents and then Sleepy Joe, Crooked Hillary, as you say, it was kind of interesting. People were engaged in it. But I think people are beginning to think that's all he's got. So I think he's, if I were him, I'd listen to Scaramucci, go on policy. But of course, Scaramucci also makes the point, he finds policy really boring. He only likes doing the personal stuff.
Lastly then, Alistair, if it doesn't work for Trump this time, do you think there is a prospect of another January 6th? Or if it doesn't work, does it mean that there is such a waning in support that there will also be a waning in that kind of potential for violence?
Look, the guy's a bad loser. And to this day, sort of still trots out this lie the whole time, the election was stolen. I think they're already beginning to sort of start that sort of message that, you know, these people will do anything. They even brought down Biden. you know, I think he'll, I would put it this way, I wouldn't rule it out, but I think that's a reason why the bigger she wins, the better.
Well, enjoy Chicago. Will Rory Stewart be traveling, or will you be doing the rest in politics across the Atlantic?
He will be there.
Very good. Well, we look forward to the rest of his politics between the two of you from Chicago, the one and only Alistair Campbell. Thank you, Alistair.
Thanks, Anton. All the best.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.